It's the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Ro is off today, but Richard Roper sitting in. Hey, Rich.
E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles.
Yeah, how about it?
I've switched.
No, you have not.
Never.
You would not.
Although that may be why Ro is not here. He could be getting a new tattoo.
I wonder if it was a contributing factor to the illness that he has on this Monday. Some of us are feeling ill after watching that game alone. I think that has contributed to certain illnesses.
First nail in the coffin has been hammered, folks.
It becomes really almost impossible to watch. It is so painful.
Well, I think, Kev, you pointed it out just a few moments ago with John Williams. If it weren't that we had such high hopes on this season and had given up draft picks and got Khalil Mack and traded up for Trubisky, all that stuff, all the things that put in place the hope that Bears fans felt for this season, it wouldn't feel as bad.
Yeah, and I don't think it was, you know, this blind Bears optimism that we seem to have every single year for the Bears before
it felt real.
Going. It felt real, and it's still like that. I think that's a factor why it's so frustrating, because it does feel like they have the personnel. I mean, the defense is so talented. There's a lot of talent on offense outside the quarterback position. And I rarely put majority of the blame on coaches, because it does come down to playing, but I put so much blame on Matt Nagy. I cannot believe the play calling from him.
Well, I'm going to send my big theory right now is I'm going to send Mitch Trubisky to the optometrist, because in the movies, whenever someone's that far off, like remember Wild Thing, Charlie Sheen?
Yeah.
They just had to get him some glasses.
Can make a difference.
Maybe he's seeing double out there. He's throwing to the middle guy.
Yes.
Remember when everybody thought Jay Cutler was literally colorblind because he kept throwing to the other team so often?
Right.
That was a big theory going on around there.
You know, it's
Smoking
funny.
Mitch was making an appearance yesterday, too. I started seeing
it's
those.
It's funny you say that, Richard, because the Bears are playing so badly, poorly, that there is a Jay Cutler appreciation blog out, and they're saying maybe we didn't appreciate Jay enough.
Uncommon Jay.
I thought the first drive basically summed up the entire season. Run up the middle for 4 yards, run up the middle for -3. Mitch Trubisky overthrows a receiver.
He's putting bruises and dents in the footballs. They're hitting the turf so hard, 15 yards from where the intended receiver is. You can go, does he see someone else? Does he have imaginary receiver friends?
Uh-huh. And I was listening, like many of you, to our Three Bears show with Hamp, Obi, and Kaz afterwards, which is absolutely magical in the way it provides therapy, entertainment. They tell it like
it's
is.
Cathartic, yeah.
Hold nothing back. And I believe the dump button was employed during that particular broadcast, because words like nincompoops made it onto the air, stupidity made it onto the air. But there were moments when it just felt like they were cutting out a few things. And who can blame them?
They deserve all the criticism and negativity that comes their way. It's just, it's embarrassing what they've become.
Chicago White Sox looking at about 60-1 right now to win the World Series. I think that's a great price on them. MLB.com listed them as one of the possible teams to break through in 2020.
There we go.
So getting those games right here on WGN and enjoying the White Sox miracle run next year.
Yeah.
I put that on Twitter after the game. I was like, are the White Sox Chicago's next championship team? And it kind of looks that way.
Strasburg on the mound opening day. It's all set. All the pieces will be in place.
And the Field of Dreams game.
And a Field of Dreams game.
I almost forgot about that. I'm so excited about that.
Field of Dreams game.
Well, we're going to be talking to the great Ed Obradovich, OB, coming up on the show. You saw the Tribune. Chicago Tribune did a nice article about Hamp and OB and Kaz and the whole show, and talked about how people are turning to them in these times of anguish as Bears fans, and that they're delivering great entertainment. We knew that if you listen to this show or you listen to any of the shows on WGN Radio, you know all about them, but it's a fun show to listen to. And OB's going to join us to tell us what he thinks. Is this season over? Have they imploded officially? Is there a sign of hope? All good questions for him. We're also going to talk to Ben Bradley. He not only has a WGN investigative piece tonight that's interesting, but he also wants to talk about the City Hall budget meeting today. Now, I didn't expect much of this. It was actually an interesting day at the City Hall talking about the budgets, and that's never happened in my history as a reporter in this town. I've never come back and said, wow, that was an interesting City Hall budget meeting. Nope.
Stop the presses.
This one was. And the reason was it was about the CPD budget, but it really became more about Eddie Johnson.
Yeah.
And there were several, I don't want to say admissions, but there were several things said today that people are reading the tea leaves about his future with the department.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
Don't you think about what's going to happen next?
I think
next
it's just a matter of time. We'll talk to Ben. But when someone is that forthright and honest about thinking about retiring, he's going to retire.
When you're talking in past tense about your accomplishments, I don't know, then there's this investigation that's going on. That wasn't referenced. But there were other things that happened there today that made you stop and say, some changes potentially there. We'll talk to Ben Bradley about that coming up in a couple minutes. Also, interesting, a major medical breakthrough right here in Chicago, and they're stopping short of saying a cure. But when it comes to cystic fibrosis, Dr. Manu Jain is a pulmonologist at Northwestern and has come up with something that stops the illness at its root. We're going to talk to someone who has suffered from cystic fibrosis, their experiences, and the hope for the future here on that particular medical, the disease that affects, 30,000 people, and a major, major breakthrough there. So happening right here, we'll talk to him about that. That's certainly a really big deal. We'll update you on the Krispy Kreme, the college student. There's some development there. He posted on his Facebook page, if you're not familiar with that story, this student in Minnesota traveled 300 miles across to Clive, Iowa to pick up hundreds of dollars of Krispy Kremes, would resell them back in his hometown. And people loved it until the local paper picked up on it. Little feel-good story, they thought. It wasn't so feel-good when they contacted Krispy Kreme. They said, this is a liability and a problem, and a cease and desist order was essentially issued to that college student. But he said he's been contacted or something new has happened. There's a development there. We'll talk about that. Also, does your dog have the flu vaccine? We talk about people getting the flu vaccine this time of year. And we say how the strain affecting humans is predicted to be a really strong and particularly potent one. It's also the case in the doggy world. So we'll talk to Steve Dale.
How can you tell if your dog has the flu? They're always kind of tired.
Sniffly.
They always want to sniffly and make little sneezing noises and then want to sleep for 12 hours.
Yeah, they always seem sort of like, you know, like the noses are fairly well lubricated.
That's why it's fun being a dog.
Steve Dale says you can really tell. And my dog has never had the flu, but she just got her flu shot. I don't know about your little doggy. Did you get the flu shot yet?
No, I didn't know I was supposed to.
Well, we'll find out
I'll find out from Steve.
Yes, that's coming up. Okay. And then top five of five you won't believe. Also, Richard, I want to talk to you because I heard you talking about The Morning Show, the new Apple Plus TV streaming show with Jennifer Aniston, Steve Carell, and that rock star cast and all the spending they put into that show. I watched the first three episodes and we should talk a little bit
I'd love
about
to get your opinion as someone who's been on those
morning
exact types of shows.
Right, and it's changed within the course of those three shows. At first, I was ready to turn it off, but then
some things
happened.
Yeah, it's
some
building, huh?
Yeah. It's building. There's something going on there that's
I can't wait to hear
special.
Your thoughts on that.
We'll talk about that coming up as well here on the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Richard Roper filling in. We're going to also talk to WGN-TV's Ben Bradley, check into the newsroom with him coming up. But first, let's check your traffic with Lauren Lapkoff. Hit that W. All right. We've got the Ben Bradley over at the WGN-TV newsroom on Bradley Place.
Hello, Editor Tim, walking in the shot.
Oh, thanks, Tim.
Hello, Rich. Hello, Anna. Boy, you guys really sold that WGN promo.
I like
that.
I think I'm going to watch tomorrow morning.
You should.
4 till 10 a.m.
Well, I'm glad that you get up that early.
Extra W just for you, B squared.
I want to ask you first, I know you've got a lot of stuff to promote, including an investigative report I want to hear more about, but this was perhaps the most interesting budget meeting at City Council I've ever witnessed, and it had to do with CBD, but it really had to do with Eddie Johnson. And so much made news from what he said before council, didn't it?
It was interesting, yes. Eddie Johnson is at this kind of unique moment in his career where he was kind of the accidental superintendent, right? He didn't actually apply for the job, but Rahm Emanuel thrust him into that position after Laquan McDonald tape. He's been there longer than most of his predecessors served. And then he had that unfortunate incident where he was found slumped over in a vehicle. The department called it a medical incident, but then he admitted to having consumed a couple of cocktails. Now there's an investigation into what exactly happened. Plus, you're getting shot at by President Trump on Twitter. And then you go before Chicago aldermen and you talk about the reality on the ground, which is that the shooting and murder numbers are down substantially, but
for sure,
many communities still don't feel safe. So it's against that whole backdrop that he went to this meeting, which traditionally has been an opportunity for, you know, aldermen to demand various things from their local commanders and districts. Some of them, you know, praise the local commander. Some of them slammed the superintendent for taking officers out of their wards. But today, Eddie Johnson was asked whether or not he's thinking about retiring. And he said, yeah, he is thinking about retiring. That, of course, set off alarm bells in newsrooms.
Hey, Ben, let me stop you there because I think we have a little clip of what you're referencing and we'd like to hear it.
I love this job. I love this city. You know, I have given 31 years now to this city and almost 4 as superintendent. You know, but I recognize also that at some point it's time to create a different chapter in your life. And I will tell you all this. When my family and I went to London for the Bears game, that's the first vacation like that that I've had since I became superintendent. And I looked at my family, and it made me realize how much of a sacrifice you make, you know, for your family when you take on positions like this.
Sounds a lot. I mean, he also even used the words toying with retirement. Certainly seems like it's possible, plausible that he may not be in this job much longer. And it seemed to be he was talking about accomplishments in past tense, how much he's done for this city. I thought it was really powerful, though, when he said he's been there since 1983 and how much has changed for officers over those years, and that now officers, more so than when he started all those years again, that all of the societal ills are being dumped at the doorstep of police officers. That's the way he put it. There is so much more they're dealing with now, and that the job has become more difficult, seemingly speaking up for the rank and file.
Without a doubt, the job has become more difficult. And the superintendent, you know, he and I talked a couple of months ago for a internal department video that was made after we saw a surge in suicides by police officers. And as we sat in his office, you know, he talked about his own struggles on the job and a moment that he described as being his rock bottom when he was pulled over. He was on a shift, pulled over to the side of the road, kind of felt just at wit's end. And he said he reached out at that time to the department. I don't know if it was a social worker or a counselor or some of the other infrastructure they have in place to help. But yeah, let's not forget, even though he's got four stars on his shoulder and has achieved the highest ranks of the Chicago police officers, this is the Chicago Police Department. This is a guy who rose up through the ranks and probably never thought he would be superintendent, but has been. And that comes with a lot of baggage and a lot of weight every single hour of the day.
Well, and on top of all of that, guys, there's, you know, the very serious physical ailments, you know, the superintendent.
He had an organ transplant.
You know, yeah. I mean, he's 58. When people see him, they're a little bit surprised to hear that. And I say that with due respect, he looks 10 years older because he's been through so much physically on top of all the emotional toil and psychological and everything else that you guys have talked about.
Without a doubt. So we're covering that today at 4 o'clock. I also want to tell you about a story we're going to break this afternoon at 4. Last week we told you about this assistant football coach that had been allowed to work at Lake Park East High School in Roselle. He was a convicted sex offender. He was convicted back in the 1990s of inappropriate sexual conduct with a girl who was roughly 14 years old at the time. He had, at the time, he only had to do 10 years in the sex offender registry, and then he came off. But the school, Lake Park East High School, now admits his name wasn't forwarded for a background check. That's how he was able to coach football. Now we've learned he was also allowed to help coach at Fenwick High School. In fact, he was on the sidelines as Fenwick made a run through the playoffs back in 2016. And this case is even more unique, and there are even more questions because the longtime head football coach at Fenwick, a guy named Gene, I don't know if it's pronounced Nutto or Nudo, he actually coached with this convicted sex offender at Driscoll Catholic around the just before he was convicted of abusing a Driscoll student.
So did I hear you right that he did not get submitted for a background check?
At Lake Park East High School, he did not. And now we've learned today, and we'll have much more at 4 o'clock, he also did not get submitted for a background check at Fenwick High School. The school is out with a statement saying that the head football coach, Gene Nudo, and the district have parted, and the school have parted ways after a conversation about this sex offender in which the head coach, according to the school, allowed someone who he had coached with in the past to basically go to football practices and be an assistant coach on the sidelines. And they're saying that the head coach, Gene Nudo, acknowledged that he did not alert Fenwick that he was doing this, that he had brought this convicted sex offender onto the sidelines. So yeah, and Fenwick and that head coach parted ways a couple of days ago, just as Fenwick was about to play its first playoff game of the season.
Right, in that case, Ben, you know, it's absolutely reasonable to surmise, and it seems like that's what came out of the conversation, that Fenwick coach was aware of what happened because he knew the guy way back in the day, Is that the case in the other school, though? Did they know about this?
We don't know what the coaching staff or athletic director at Lake Park East High School knew. Mm-hmm. They've been suspended because the district is making that point, that they're the ones who failed to submit this guy's name for a background check, mm-hmm. which would have picked up that previous conviction. Now, interestingly, I was able to reach the victim from that 1992 mm-hmm. case. By phone today. She told me she was just 14 years old at the time.
So young.
And she is absolutely appalled that this guy has still been able to be around kids coaching football.
Of course. Oh, my gosh. What a powerful report. What else do you have coming up? I also thought I heard something about another investigative piece you're working
on. Yeah, Joe Donlan's working on a piece tonight. You've heard about bump stocks. President Trump mm-hmm. Made a big deal when he said that his administration was banning bump stocks in the wake of the Las Vegas shooting. Well, Joe Donlan is going to report on another device that is widely available, being sold online, that essentially accomplishes the same thing as a bump stock, which is turning, you know, just a regular old gun into just a rapid fire weapon that's able to shoot very quickly and potentially injure a lot of people. And authorities here in our area are worried about it as they're seeing signs of it popping up mm-hmm. on the streets.
All right, we'll be watching for that. The WGN TV yep. News at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10. Ben Bradley, thank you very much.
Good to be with you guys.
You too.
Thanks,
Ben. Coming up here on The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVellantis, starring Richard Roper today. We're going to talk with the Crane Chicago business. They did a very nice job of covering McDonald's and the situation that happened over the weekend. The CEO abruptly resigns or is fired, however you want to put it. The board meets over a consensual relationship that Easterbrook was having with a fellow employee. This, as he had been credited with a lot of really turning around the success there. Revenues were doing well, soaring, maybe a strong word, but certainly things were doing well over at McDonald's. And what's ahead now for this Chicago-based company? We'll talk about that and much more coming up here. But first, we're going to go to the Northwestern Newsroom with the news and Kim Gordon.
Girl, you deserve the best in life. So tonight I'm going to treat you right. Girl, I hope you have an appetite.
Remember that McDonald's jingle?
Too soon.
The Todd Stroger contracts that got passed through.
I do remember that.
The 24-9s, because they're under 25,000. And when that happened, you didn't have as much oversight. But that's a separate issue. We're going to be talking to Cranes right now, because over the weekend, an abrupt resignation, a termination from the board to terminate the McDonald's CEO, Mr. Easterbrook, stepping down and already named a new CEO. I just want to ask you at this time, was this expected? Is this something that we had thought about at all? It seemed like it just popped over the weekend. Dalton Barker is at Crane Chicago Business. You've been covering these types of issues in this world. What do you think, Dalton? What do you make of it?
This was not expected, I can tell you that right now. When this dropped around midday Sunday, I had just gotten back and was about to throw in a pot roast in, so I was not waiting for this, and I don't think really anyone else either, noted by the reaction on social media and stuff. So,
but you know what's interesting? I've been following you, your columns and your stories about McDonald's, and a lot of it has been success stories. There's been a lot of progress and revenue success stories. There's a lot of people credit this CEO who just stepped down or got fired as leading a turnaround, if you will. All day breakfast, digital advances, technology, delivery to people, bringing the McDonald's to their house, and all kinds of things that were happening that seemed like real positive news, and then this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I had an analyst earlier today say that Steve Easterbrook was the best CEO across the restaurant industry.
Wow.
So that's the type of person we're dealing with here. I mean, this guy, to certain people, you know, he kind of has a mixed reaction depending on who you talk to, but I think by and large people see him. He's been with McDonald's too. He had been with McDonald's since 1993. So this is one of these guys that, you know, had ketchup flowing through his veins and was just an absolute, he's done a lot right. You know, when he took over for Don Thompson, they had a real serious issue there, and he's been able to really resurrect sales. Like you mentioned before, he's been able to lead to a complete technological overhaul. And he's been able to modernize the stores and kind of get people on board with some things like fresh beef and mobile ordering and delivery. So it's definitely a big loss for McDonald's, but I guess we're going to see what the new CEO, Chris Kaczynski, Wilt Duke. He was one of Easterbrook's main guys that he brought in when Easterbrook was hired as the CEO in 2015. He's got all the pedigree, Duke undergrad, Harvard MBA. He's right out of Central Casting, so I guess we're going to see what he can do over the next, 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, Dalton, you mentioned some of these advances as well. And, like, for example, of course, the famous former Rock and Roll McDonald's here in downtown Chicago, when they finally finished, the complete renovation of that and rebuilding of that. You walk in there, it's got a green rooftop, and you mentioned the mobile ordering that you can do right there in addition to third-party app things, a full cafe. So a lot of great things that Easterbrook was doing. What do we know about the circumstances? From what I've read, I mean, this is a guy who's divorced. He's got, grown children, I think. Was involved in a relationship, but it was someone who was directly reporting to him, and that was the violation of the McDonald's company policy?
Exactly. He was terminated without cause, which is a very interesting distinction, because somewhere his kind of exit, termination, severance package, whatever you want to detail it as, is somewhere around $37 million. So it's not like he was terminated for cause. This is obviously very interesting, because today too, their head of HR, global head of HR, also stepped down today too. He resigned today. There's been no comment from McDonald's around there.
Do you look at that as linked? Because when I saw that, I wondered.
I do not want to personally speculate, but obviously, this overall, there's a little bit of turmoil there at McDonald's today, and you're seeing that in, the Wall Street or the Street has them down around 3% today. So I think more than anything, like you mentioned, Easterbrook was really the one who went out and said, we have to do things differently. We have Domino's of the world. The landscape's different now. It's not you're just competing with Burger King and Wendy's. You're competing against Chipotle. You're competing against a lot of different people, and we have to be different.
Especially when you can have anything delivered to your doorstep, which became a $4 billion business, if I'm reading the Crane's articles correctly, for McDonald's. Really, still a small percentage overall of their revenue, but had grown substantially under his watch. The issue here also was, you saw many labor groups. They read this as the right decision because they had been addressing this issue of sexual harassment at McDonald's for some time now, filing lawsuits against the company, saying the climate they created was not sufficient and that Easterbrook was in charge of it. Now they're saying, oh, see, look why. I don't know that necessarily you can draw that connection, but it does seem as if...
Well, it reminds me a little bit.
There's some change coming.
Years ago, when I was working at CBS, and we got a huge memo on television saying that nobody who's in a supervisory position could get involved in a relationship with anybody who was reporting to them directly. And the memo was from Les Moonves, who was dating Julie Chen and then married her at the time.
Oh gosh!
And again, I don't want to put you in the position of speculating here, Dalton, but it sounds to me, from what we're told here, no one was accusing Easterbrook of using his position to coerce anybody into a relationship, or there's been no complaints of harassment. It was a matter of a relationship with an underling. And again, I don't know if this is the case, but it almost sounds like if he had gone through his own proper channels and maybe talked to the board of directors, that might have been something that said, okay, if you're going to enter in a relationship with someone who reports to you, maybe they can be transferred. It might have been something that could have been resolved. It sounds like it took everybody by surprise over the weekend.
I mean, I can definitely speak to it. It took everybody by surprise. This was, they just had their third quarter earnings. There was no indication that this was coming. And if you look at it, he was fired on Friday, technically, by the board of directors, and then it was released Sunday afternoon. So the timing is just very, very interesting to have him on the earnings call a couple weeks ago. And then now this happening, there's just, it's definitely an interesting timeline.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe more to come on that front, which is why they abruptly changed it. Abruptly fired him, because we may learn a little more about exactly the circumstances surrounding this.
I'm going to think there's 37 million reasons why we're probably not going to hear too much from Mr. Easterbrook. And probably some NDAs involved, I would think.
So
right,
a very strict NDA, actually. Yeah. He's not allowed to be a consultant with anyone for any competitors for 2 years. He's not allowed to talk publicly about any of this in any part articles, books, anything for 5 years.
Okay.
So if he honors that, it's going to be a long time.
He gets a nice goodbye package, though. That's become public today, and I know you've been covering that as well. The severance package is fairly lucrative, and I guess that includes the non-disclosure, and maybe that's why that is that way.
Exactly.
Well, we also, it's important to us, not just as a story about, gee whiz, what happened there, but that It's a Chicago-based company and employs thousands of people across our area. So the success of this company is important mm-hmm. to all of us. One of the things that sort of gets you about McDonald's is when you see some of the other fast food chains like Chick-fil-A or Popeyes launching these products, or even who's the one who had the Impossible Burger?
Burger King.
Burger King. Yeah. It's, they're generating this tremendous interest in these long lines around this one item or something that's just like sizzling and going viral and people are in coming up with. And you don't see that so far with McDonald's, really.
Yeah, I think that they've been really pushing towards, at least the franchisees have really been pushing a premium chicken sandwich to, you know, kind of hold back Chick-fil-A. I think the Popeyes thing, this is looking more and more like a flash in the pan in terms of, I think people have to realize when we're talking about McDonald's, we're talking about 14,000 U.S. stores alone, almost 40,000 stores globally. So when they run a roll out things, you know, this is not like a quick turnaround. You got to have to build in a complete logistics system to get these deliveries. If not, you run into what Popeyes did, which is they simply ran out and then they took weeks to resupply. And now kind of the whole viral, you know, the viral nature of it kind of, you know, yeah. get snuffed out.
Yeah.
So I think the big thing with them is, you know, I think they're exploring these things, but I think they're trying to also figure out, are these things fad? Are they here to stay? And if they're here to stay, well, it's going to take a massive investment from McDonald's.
Since we're talking about local chains, this one no longer local, but Mariano's bought by Kroger. The leaked memo came out to explain that big changes could be on the way for Mariano's, kind of spotlighting that they're this big brand, but nobody really knows what we stand for. And they're sort of struggling to come to terms with who they want to be for the future.
Yeah, Mariano's is now owned by Kroger's, and you know, depending on what time of the day you look at Kroger's share price, they're down more than 20% this year, and they've really been struggling. It's a really competitive space with Amazon buying Whole Foods. There's a lot of, even in the delivery service of Peapods and stuff, that's really hurt margins. And Kroger's is the largest grocery store chain, exclusive grocery store chain, and so I think there's a lot of different things that have been happening at Mariano's. I wrote a story a couple months ago that got just unbelievable amount of reader feedback. I didn't realize how passionate people were around their grocery stores.
They totally are.
They are. I don't know if they're more fanatic about, you know, which grocery store is best or whether they should, you know, bench Trubisky or not. but I think
no, it's almost like
change.
A cult, you know, like even
it
like,
really it's like don't
the
change my store.
Yeah,
don't
happy
change
hour
my grocery
at the,
store.
At the wine bar has changed at Mariano's.
Well, and it has. The way I was just there this weekend, there's no more oyster bar. There's no more like people shopping with the wine glasses in their hands. Ooh. There's no more like, remember, you said it was kind of, there's this like
it was a
dining,
bougie place.
It was a bougie kind of fancy pants place at some point. And they had the piano music and that's gone. And then there's a lot more self checkouts too. I've noticed I was there. It seems like they're really encouraging you with the long lines and the man checkouts to go over to the self-checkout.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I don't know exactly, this release is going to be on Wednesday, the full what kind of Kroger's just trying to do in terms of rebranding. But, you know, when things are tight and margins get squeezed, you know, a lot of the fluff kind of gets cut over time. And that's already been happening at Mariano's since they were acquired. You know, Kroger's has been really pushing a big self-checkout initiative, and this really is pretty obvious what it comes down to. It's just a labor cost. When the grocery store industry traditionally has been margins of 1% to 3%, you know, 4% in the grocery store business is historically great. So when you're in such a low-margin business and you have labor pressure, I mean, and you have all these other, you know, cost pressures on you, you got to start cutting things, and Kroger's has not been able to handle that so far this year, and looks like they're about to have a real big rebranding, and I'm sure that's going to impact Mariano's in some way, being their parent company.
All right, well, we'll look for those changes. That announcement this Wednesday, you said, right, Dalton? We'll find out more about what's going to happen.
Yes, ma'am.
To the Mariano's. Dalton Barker, Crane Chicago.
Thanks,
Business.
Dalton.
Thanks for checking in with us. We
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Enjoy your reporting as well.
I'll tell you one thing. When Bernie Kroger founded that grocery chain in Cincy, like in 1883, there wasn't nobody playing no piano or clinking no wine glasses,
it's
baby.
It's a self-playing piano toward the end there.
You're putting your cigarettes out on the floor, the dirt floor of the Kroger's. They're going back to basics.
Well, I don't get it, because toward the end there, it kind of went self-playing.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. You still got to get rid of it? All right. I guess you don't want that image anymore. You're rebranding. We'll see what the new rebrand is all about. Back here on the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVellantis. Richard Roper in today, as Ro is heartsick and just sick overall after watching that Bears game. I don't think he could bring himself to come to work today, but I hope he's better soon. We were talking, I want to read a couple texts real quick about the story we were just talking about. So if people are weighing in on the Mariano's and the changes that are expected on Wednesday, still miss Dominic's. Remember the Dominic's back in the day?
Of course.
I remember the Dominic's.
Dominic's underrated pizza.
Yeah, remember the Dominic's Pizza? Oh, thank you for remembering that.
Friday, $5 pizza.
My parents used to bring that home, and we were thrilled.
I was an AMP guy myself when I came to the grocery stores, the old AMP.
Yeah, the AP. Did you have the Dominic's on the south side?
We did. We had Dominic's.
Oh, definitely. 151st, I believe. Or was it 147th?
I think Sibley. Yeah, Sibley Boulevard, 147th. Lauren's right.
My sister worked at the one in Rogers Park where we grew up. She was the salad bar manager. And,
I lasted 17 minutes at a Red Lobster at one point until I finally found out that I was 14 and I wasn't supposed to be there yet. You know, back in the day, I was tall.
That's frowned upon.
Yeah.
Say goodbye to the unlimited shrimp.
I was a bagger at Jewel.
You were a bagger, too.
Can you imagine that one, bagging at Jewel? Like, just I'm getting it right. Just hold on a second.
Senior in high school. I'm going to put more in here.
This? What are you buying?
So perfectly bagged, you'd be afraid to take the groceries out of the bag.
It is hard not to judge people based on their purchases, I'll be honest.
That's true.
That's the other thing.
Tells you a lot about somebody.
Well, I could see you sort of lecturing someone on the eco-friendliness. Never. Put it in another bag. Put it in another. No.
I will fit it
in this one.
Even to this day, when I watch people bag groceries, I'm like, oh, you're not structuring it right. You know, you got to put the foundations, like the walls on the side, put the little stuff in the middle, put the heavy on the bottom.
I can't criticize that because I have the same thing. I have the OCD level where I actually arrange them on the conveyor belt in the order I expect them to be bagged.
That's smart.
I do that too.
Yeah.
It helps. The salad in the back, the eggs in the front.
The cold stuff together, the meat separate, same with like maybe cleaning supplies as well as
I'll cross-check that 97-year-old that's bagging my groceries, too, if he gets it wrong. I'm like, all right, step aside, Banjo Joe.
I don't care. That some of the older people are still required to ask if people want help out to their car. And I'm like, oh, you should
those are the same people who are seating you at Wrigley Field, by the way. Those are the exact same mushers. Like, those are their winter jobs.
Exactly. I feel like I can do it.
And I love them to death, but when you go to a Cubs game, you're like, you're going to be seated in the fourth inning if we keep going at this pace. I know where section 118 is. Too soon?
Is it OCD, though? I mean, does everyone sort of group their frozen items on the conveyor belt together?
I would think most people do, but
half of these millennials, they're already starting to dig into their cashews and stuff before they even get checked out. They don't care about this sort of thing.
What does the millennial age group have to do with that?
Nothing. It just seems like the right thing to do.
The war on millennials continues.
Okay, Boomer.
Boomer, please.
Me and Kevin learned that today.
That's right. That's
Boomer. I was surprised you guys didn't know the Boomer thing. Because isn't it a slight that your generation uses on the Boomer generation?
That's apparently what they say. I keep thinking that maybe people are making these up to keep us fighting.
That's a good point.
You're supposed to say Boomer anytime you're thinking of using certain other terms, especially like white people doing rap songs.
I always get advice on that too. Like old man, get off my lawn is normally
Boomer.
That's my reference. But John introduced us to the old Boomer term.
It was trending today, so I was wondering, is this widely used? Because I don't see it that much.
It got a little nasty over the weekend.
Uh-oh.
Surprising, shockingly.
On the internet? On social media?
Turn.
People were going after each other?
People are so nice on the internet.
That's true.
Such a kind, warm environment where people can express ideas without any fear of being judged.
I enjoy when people disagree with me about a movie with a subject header, kill yourself.
And like, oh my God.
Or a movie.
When you hit click tweet, Rich, for a review, do you just like click tweet and then run and hide because you know no matter what you say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, especially if it's something that they all want to love. Not that they've seen it by the time I review it. Well, the other thing is I set up my public email with an auto reply when there's certain hateful words in it, and it auto replies, thank you so much for your autograph request. If you could send me an 8x10 glossy and a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll be glad to honor it. And then they always write back, I didn't ask for that. And then they get the exact same response back. Thank you so much for your autograph request. And they'll sometimes argue with the auto reply for a good day and a half before they figure out that they're talking to an auto reply.
Well, our text line, 302-917-200. If you text in, there's always an auto reply. And it's very happy. Like, thank you so much for listening to WGN. We appreciate your response, but sometimes it's like, your show stinks. Auto reply is, thank you so much for listening.
It is the perfect one for a lot of those texts.
It really is. We just got a text. I'm in my car laughing, my brain's out. I'm one of those people that arranges my groceries on the belt. My wife thinks I'm psycho. She just throws it on up there.
That's what I do. I didn't know people organize it before.
I'm not above even wiping down the conveyor belt if the person in front of me has had a few things that have leaked a little bit.
The news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up here at 4 o'clock and much more on the way, including a major medical breakthrough right here in Chicago at Northwestern University. We'll talk to some people whose lives have been changed over this breakthrough. It's the Roe Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper in today for Roe. Coming up, we're going to talk about Krispy Kreme. There's been a development with that college student who was trying to sell them in his town because they didn't have them in his town. So he'd drive the 300 miles and go and buy them. And then he thought he was an entrepreneur, right?
They're the original edibles.
Until Krispy Kreme didn't really like that idea, but now the two have talked, and we'll update that a little bit. Also, your chance to win Blackhawks tickets this hour, so stay tuned for that, courtesy of Four Seasons. A pair of tickets to the Blackhawks take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. But we have special guests here with us. Very happy to have Dr. Manu Jain of Northwestern University Medicine, and also Peter Janopoulos, a patient living with cystic fibrosis. There is a major medical breakthrough we want to tell people about, and this seems like a serious deal in terms of helping improve the lives of others. Just announced that a large number of people who suffer from this disease have some relief in sight. And Dr. Jane, thank you for being here. I want to ask you, would you say this is a cure? How would you describe what has happened here, this medical breakthrough?
Well, I don't think I would go as far to say it's a cure, but it is a remarkable achievement in the way we are able to treat cystic fibrosis patients. This treatment called Trikafta targets the underlying cause. Cystic fibrosis is a genetic disease. It's caused by mutations in a certain protein called CFTR. And the ability of this medication, Trikafta, to really improve the function of this mutant protein, not back to normal levels, but much better, much higher levels than compared to without the treatment, really, really is going to change what patients experience, what they can expect for the short term, and we hope for the long term as well.
Most of us have heard cystic fibrosis, but I can't say that most of us would know exactly what it's like to live with this disease, and I want to hear from Peter more about that. But is it a deadly disease?
Yes. You know, it's associated with premature death. The latest statistics suggest that median expected survival is in the mid to late 40s, which is actually a substantial improvement compared to, say, 20, 25 years ago, but clearly not a normal life expectancy.
And it's something that primarily affects the lungs, at least for, that's what I would remember when we would hear about someone with, and I'm sure Peter can speak to that.
Yes.
Yeah, Peter, you've been living with cystic fibrosis. This news has got to lead to celebrations in your family. It's that big, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, cystic fibrosis sort of affects everybody in different ways, but the easiest way to think about it is it's like having a really bad cold every day of your life. So you feel tired, you're constantly coughing up mucus. And in my particular case, you know, I had to cough up blood almost on a weekly basis.
Starting back when you were a child, this would be happening to you?
It really started, the blood started coming out basically when I was in my 20s. And from that point on, it was very regular to the point where it's called a big bleed. But basically what happened is I had a bleed that was so severe that they had to take out the lower lobe of my left lung.
Wow.
So after that occurred, you know, I would be coughing up blood on a weekly basis, and it was really a struggle to get through every day because these things could emerge when you least expected it. You know, you're going through your everyday life, and then boom, this would happen.
On top of everything else, you're kind of got that in the back of your mind all the time if you're going to be in any kind of a work situation, a social situation, whatever the case may be.
Absolutely. I think anybody who has CF knows the physical difficulties of the disease, but also it's the psychological difficulties of all these things that can emerge in a moment's notice and then sort of snap and take your life in a direction that, of course, you haven't perceived it to go.
In your mind, you, of course, thought you would deal with this for the rest of your life. Is that how you perceived it?
Yeah.
This is the way life was going to be until this happened.
Absolutely. And even in addition to that, given the severity of my particular bleeds, there was this constant fear, you know, would I leave my wife and son behind immediately? Oh. You know, how do you prepare for that? But I think the amazing thing is once I was on this medication, literally 36 hours afterwards, the bleeding stopped, and literally I stopped having to cough involuntarily. It
worked
that quickly and that effectively, and it changed my life, and I really hope, I'm very confident it's going to change the lives of everyone who has CF that the medicine can work for.
That's so good to hear. And I think anyone listening right now who has a family member who deals with chronic illness or disease, you know how powerful a breakthrough like this can be, because it changes everybody's life and the whole family. And yeah. When something like this happens, it's a magical moment. Dr. Jane, how would you describe this in terms of breakthroughs we've seen in recent science and medicine?
Well, I think it is a substantial breakthrough. I think, you know, down the road, when we look back on the history of cystic fibrosis, there are certain seminal events that that we can look at, and this will be one of them. Mm. You know, we've had medications that have been developed over the last 7 or 8 years, but they were applicable to a small percentage of patients, depending on their mutation. It didn't work as well as the Trikafta works. Trikafta is now applicable to 90% of CF patients. So, and we think it's going to be a substantial improvement in their day-to-day symptoms, what they can expect going forward as well. So this will be, I think, one of those days we'll look back to, like, we change CF in a very meaningful way.
How young are people when they're first diagnosed?
Well, so in the U.S., there's infant newborn screening. So the vast majority of patients are diagnosed within a few weeks of being born. Now, one of the things about this medication is that the studies that have been done have only shown effects and safety in 12 and over patients. But as time goes on, new studies will be done to make sure it's safe in younger patients. So not too far down the road, you can envision a situation where a family's given this devastating news that their child has CF, but then very shortly after that, they can start this medication potentially. And what we don't know is that, you know, in contrast to Peter, who is being treated for complications of CF, we may be able to prevent the complications of CF if it starts at a young enough age. And that's the real power of this approach.
And as a part of the testing, doctor, with someone like Peter, do you take him off the medication to make sure that this is the actual direct causal reason for his improvement, which seems necessary, but also a little cruel from Peter's standpoint, I would think so.
At this point, I think Peter would kill me if I stopped this medication. So I don't think Peter's going to sign up for anything like that. But you know, the effects are so profound that I'm not in doubt that this is really
and
helping
fast.
Peter.
The 36 hours.
Yeah,
Peter mentioned.
this is what we have seen, and I think this is what we expect to see.
That is just phenomenal news, Peter. How's your family? What did they do? How did they react to this success?
I think we're all just enjoying the fact that we can sort of settle into the normal difficulties of a normal life. You know, I think so many people take for granted sort of the mundane nature of this is what happens day A, day B, and to be able to sort of just float into the difficulties that other people have to encounter every day is a strange but amazing blessing.
Oh, I bet. Well, thank you so much for sharing the story. Thank you for sharing this breakthrough in research. These are just wonderful times when you hear something like this and lives like yours changing practically overnight. It's truly amazing. Thank you for sharing your story, Peter. And thank you, Dr. Jane.
From
Northwestern Medicine. And we're going to have the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the bottom of the hour. Also coming up, we'll talk about the Krispy Kreme development, that college student who was selling the donuts in another town and Krispy Kreme didn't like it. Some developments there as well to report.
I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say, even though this is not Dr. Jane's specialty, he's going to tell you to take it easy with the Krispy Kremes no matter what. Moderation,
is that
doc.
Your feeling?
Probably a good call,
Dr.
right?
Jane, yeah, he says, yeah. You like to weigh in on the donuts?
He says thumbs up
what
to moderation.
What do you
moderation.
Tell your patients?
I think moderation is a good way to do many things in life. So
thank you for that.
Also.
Where were you when I was 32?
Yeah, we like donuts around here.
My God, when is this press? When is somebody in this town going to take that Nagy and that Pace, those two morons, when are they going to take them to task? It's 34 years since we won the world championship. 34! And they're stumbling, fumbling, fumbling around like a bunch of nincompoops.
The great Ed Obradovich, the must-listen-to radio right here on WGN after the games. You got to listen. Ed Obradovich, thank you for joining us as you do. Every Monday after the Bears play, I just want to point out a well-deserved, just a great article in the Chicago Tribune about what you guys do, you and Dan Hampton and Kaz and the show you put on here on WGN Radio. Chicago Tribune just broke down why it's so successful. Part therapy, people love listening to you after the game, and you're helping out Bears fans after another crushing loss.
Well, Anna, that's awfully nice of you to say that. you know, Dan Hampton and I have been together for friendship for since 1979, a long time.
Right.
And he's one of the greatest players I've ever seen play that inside position. By that, I mean defensive tackle. And obviously, he's in the Hall of Fame. But I tell you what, the show yesterday, that was one of the most trying shows that I've ever done. And I've been doing this for quite a while. I'm going to tell you, half the time, Anna, I didn't know where to even go with words. Stumbling around myself. I have, in my world of football, I have never in my life seen a half of football played at any level. And I'm talking Pop Warner, high school, college, and pros. I mean, when you, in the first half, you go 5 3-and-outs, and you have a total of 20 plays, and you punt 6 times, and you have a total running and passing of 9 yards. And do you know out of the 9 yards, how many yards we passed for? One. That would be one as in one. I've never heard or read or seen anything like that in my career of being in Chicago, watching football, playing with the Bears, winning a world championship, and seeing things happen. Hollywood couldn't make this up.
OB, he's
tell
right.
You what, I was totally lost yesterday. I don't get it. How can you pass for 1 yard? Now, I asked Mark Carmen when we found out they had, you know, the first half they had a total of 9 yards. I can't get over that. I said, Mark, can you go back to find out for one of these stat companies?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when is the last time a team in the first half of football had 9 total yards running and passing? Well, he went to somewhere, I forget the name of it, and he came up. The farthest they could go back was about 40 years, and they had never heard of that.
I heard you guys live on the air when you were doing that. You said the fewest yards, 9 yards, go back 40 years to find a team in the NFL that has done that. When you're doing that, it's impossible to win. And I think what we start looking at here as Bears fans is we wonder, is this it? Is the season over? What's the hope for the future? Do you see any signs of hope for SOB? Anything there at all?
Well, I think one of the things that has to happen is they've got to take, and I'm not kidding around about this either, they've got to take the play calling away from Nagy. I understand he's the head coach, and, you know, he's calling the plays and everything, but my God, Anna, every game, and it comes down to the last minute, the last second of every game this year, of every game last year, we score 10 points, we score 14, we score 16. I mean, one time, not last week, this game yesterday, last week we had the ball for 38 minutes and we scored 16 points. Now, if you had Aaron Rodgers or any other quarterback worth their weight, I tell you what, they'd have been in the 40s or 50s. We can't score points. He gets down there the prior week 16 times in the red zone. And for folks, that's the 20-yard line in. That's the scoring zone. He tried one time to go into the end zone. We're on the 1 yard line, and we have to settle for a field goal. It's game after game after game. This guy stretches it out, plays scared to death football, hoping to play in the last second we can kick a field goal. That's not how you play this game. You just don't play it that way. You go out to destroy people, and you score touchdowns. It's a violent game, and you've got to have people that are so committed and that truly understand the game. And from what I've seen with the Bears head coach, he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand it. All you have to do is go back between last season and the beginning of this season. What did they do in the offseason? Nothing. What did they do in the mini camps? Nothing. What did they do in training camp? Nothing. What did they do in the 4 exhibition games? Nothing. And what have we done so far halfway through the season? We can't even score a touchdown. We score about a touchdown a game. That's not how this game is intended to play. And I'll tell you what, these kids, and I'll say it again, these players, they're playing their hearts out. Mm-hmm. I can see it in them. I can feel it. They're playing their hearts out on both sides of the ball. And when you got a guy leading that struggles to find a way to make a call, my God, flood a zone in the end zone when you're in the red area to score. Flood a zone in the end zone. If it's the middle by the post or if it's in the corners, throw 2-3 people, receivers in there. And if they're covered, throw the damn ball into the stands. Try to score a touchdown. Try to win the football game instead of coming down every time, game after game, to the last second for some miracle play to happen so we could win the football game. It's not fair to the players, and it's not fair to the plans. And as far as I'm concerned, this guy Nagy, he is lost in space.
I don't really have a question, OB, because everything you just said is exactly how I feel, and I think 100% of Bears fans feel as well. When it comes to the play calling, OB,
oh my God,
I almost took my shoe off and threw it at the TV watching it. You're at the 1 yard line and you hand it off to your 5'5" running back when you got David Montgomery on the sideline. And guess what happened? He got stuffed at the line. He almost fumbled the ball. Next play, they hand it off to Montgomery and look what happens. He gets into the end zone. I just can't believe what I'm watching, OB. I'm stunned watching Bears games.
Why they have Tariq Cohen, he's our main back. Okay, not Williams. This kid is our main back. He's in the ace position. Do you know how much fear that strikes into the defense's heart? How about zilch? Zero. They sit back there. Did you remember we played the Saints? After play was over, they were making fun of Cohen. Their guy put his hand on top of his helmet. I mean, what are you thinking about? On the 1 yard line, and you give a dive, a quick opener right up the middle to a kid that's 5'5 and weighs about 180 pounds. I mean, my God. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, folks.
How do you fix this, OB? How do they fix it? Can you fix it? There's 8 games left. I mean, they needed basically a miracle to get into the playoffs.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's one thing I think that they have to do. They've got to realize where they're at with Trubisky. I'm serious. They got to. You telling me a kid's been here 3 years and he's playing better football now than he did when he came here? He's not. He's not an accurate passer. He wasn't, he is not now, and he never will be. And I'll tell you what, next week we got Detroit coming in. Start him, fine, go. But I'll tell you what, if he's stumbling around in the middle of the second quarter, whatever, you can't let this game get out of hand. Make the switch. Put Chase Daniel in and see what can be done. And then see what happens. And if you have to put him back in, you put him back in. But you can't keep shoving Mitchell Trubisky down everybody's throat and telling everybody that he's a top-flight quarterback when he is not. He is not even close. And Nagy's got to quit shoving him down everybody's throat.
When the offense is this abysmal, talk about how that might affect the defense. Is that kind of thing contagious on a team? Does frustration just sort of abound when you get in a situation that just is this bad?
And I know what you're talking about. You know, back in 63, back in the day, I mean, we had a defense, my God, it was second to none. We had some of the greatest players that ever put on a football uniform. And we went after people, I'm telling you, heart and soul, physically, play after play, game after game. And I'll tell you what has to be done here is they've got to develop an attitude. They have to get an attitude. They've got to go after people. And they're really not going after people. You know, I could see it. You know, the defense this year compared to last year's defense, it's night and day. And where are we getting beat on defense? Our strong suit was our front seven, okay? Not our defensive backs, our front seven. Our defensive backs, they had a great year last year, but they really didn't have to do too much. And where we're getting beat up front now, in game after game, we're getting beat at the line of scrimmage. And more often than not, when you lose the battle at the line of scrimmage on both offense and defense, you will lose the football game.
Eagles with 146 yards on the ground. Bears just 62, averaging 3.4 yards a carry.
Kevin, it's. I mean, I don't know what to tell you where to go. But getting back to what Anna, I can tell you what. I would bench Trubisky, I'd start Chase Daniels, and I'd turn the play calling over to somebody else. I'm serious. And you'll see how play calling works. Normally what happens on an offensive or defensive game plan, the prior three games that you have played, you'll have quality control people that work for you. They'll go back, you get the down and distance, the time, you know, if it's in the first quarter and 8 minutes have gone by and it's third down and 8 yards to go on your own 45-yard line, they've got all the stats, usually from the prior three games. And then they come in and they sit down and they put a game plan, how to attack that team, how to attack their tendencies. That's basically how it's done. And Nagy, I don't know what's going on over there, but I'll tell you what. Just look at us. Down after down after down. The first five times, three and out, we punt. And to go back to, again to 9 yards, eight of them running and one passing. I hope these people driving cars don't crash into.
Well, that's actually, we have several listeners.
I don't know how to explain this.
OB, we have several listeners asking how you've been able to maintain your composure after these games. Although I'm not sure I'd call it that, but you've used words like nincompoops when I'm sure you were thinking of other words that could have been utilized in that moment, but that maybe you're taking deep breaths during the breaks or something because you were, I mean, you can't believe what you're seeing out there.
No, and I'm going to tell you, neither can Dan. You know, and again, and I don't mean to talk in circles here, but there's it's right in front of us. It's like your listeners right now, the people that watch the game on Sunday or Monday or Thursday, like they can't see what's going on.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to get over and tell them, oh, no, that's not happening. It's this. The team, we're together. We're all together. I've got your back. You got my back. I work with the receivers every day, and they have my back. I love them. They love me. The defense loves us. We love them. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Just get out there and play football like you're supposed to.
Thank you, OB. We want to thank you for the entertainment you provide and the therapy you provide after every game. And we actually had callers earlier on the John Williams show saying that they don't even watch the game anymore. They just listen to you guys because that's all they need.
I tell you, you know what? It's unfortunate, Anna, but I'll tell you what. And again, these kids, I can see it. They're fighting, doing everything they've got. But you've got to have a leader that puts you in the right position, puts you in the right place to attack offensively. And that has not happened all year. Why? We don't score touchdowns. We don't score points. We wait till the last damn minute and hope that somebody kicks a field goal or some miracle happens. I'm sorry, but that's basically the way it's been.
It's heartbreaking. Thank you, OB. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
The Rokan Show with me, Anna Tavlantis. Richard Roper sitting in and checking in at
number five.
Thank you, Orion. So, as rumors swirled that he'll be retiring soon, Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson acknowledged that, well, he's given it some thought recently, but the city's top cop did not confirm when he talked to the city hall today, to the alderman at the budget meeting for CPD. He didn't say or confirm in any way that he is planning to step down.
Well, you know, I've been toying with it for some time, but that London trip really made me realize, especially for them, how much I've given to the city and how much I've taken away from them.
So you decided that it's time?
So I haven't said that, but I'm just saying that made me think about it, you know, because I owe it to them also.
I thought he was going to say that London trip made me realize how bad the Bears were.
I did too. I thought he was going in a different direction.
Some other people thinking about retiring after that trip.
Yeah, really. Maybe he could convince others. But he, you know, remember, he did not choose the superintendent's job. It chose him. There were five candidates, and they decided to reopen the search and chose Eddie from within the ranks of the police department. He's been there since 1983, he said. And he also mentioned this today at City Council.
I love this job. I love this city. You know, I have given 31 years now to this city and almost four as superintendent. You know, but I recognize also that at some point it's time to create a different chapter in your life. And I will tell you all this. When my family and I went to London for the Bears game, that's the first vacation like that I've had since I became superintendent. And I looked at my family, and it made me realize how much of a sacrifice you make, you know, for your family when you take on positions like this.
Certainly sounded like he is retired.
He's going to retire. I think what took everybody by surprise is that he was so honest. Because reporters, we don't expect that. Because usually, you know, even if he was going to retire in a month, he'd be saying, listen, I haven't even thought about that. We've got a job at hand where, you know, the numbers are going in the right direction, but there's much more work to do. And that would have been that. So when you're that honest, you're moving on.
Yeah.
And good for him if he does.
You do feel that way. And so, right, he's been there all that time.
Three decades of service.
There is that investigation into him being found asleep at the wheel, and he called for that investigation, and we'll soon find out the results of that investigation. He didn't talk about that today because he says that those two things are not at all
related.
Mm-hmm. So, fair enough. We'll wait to hear more from the police superintendent. Checking in at...
Number four.
A Chicago police sergeant managed to run a race. Okay, listen to this. Listen to all these accomplishments. Okay, so he managed to run a race, save a life, and get engaged all in the same day.
I didn't even move from my couch.
I know. I watched a 5K over the weekend, part of it.
Hey, he could be the next superintendent just on this day alone.
Promote him. What's even more impressive is that Sergeant Mike Nowacki took part in the annual hot chocolate run on Sunday. That's a fun event.
Yeah.
Full SWAT gear.
Wow.
All right. Full, so he's a member of the SWAT team. Near the finish line, he spotted an unresponsive woman on the ground. Nowacki started giving CPR until paramedics arrived. Doctors say the sergeant's quick response likely helped save her life. Nowacki spoke to reporters today and talked about what he did after this eventful day.
I went home and passed out because I was mentally and physically exhausting, and she was still at work.
And I finished my tour duty at work and drove home and just sat on the couch, and I think we watched some show on Netflix, and just that's how we celebrated.
Netflix and chill. See?
Wow.
Even heroes do that. You know, we mentioned earlier he got engaged, so let's hear what his new fiance, Aaron Gubala, said, had to say about the engagement.
It was great because, one, he finished it in his full gear, helmet, everything, and he's sweating, and I wanted to talk to him about what happened down the way, find out more information, and then he got down on one knee, and I thought that he was hurt, and then he just said, Aaron, I don't know what to say. And then I realized what was going on, and then I was like, oh. And then in one of the pictures we had taken, you could just see with all of our gear on, like, we really couldn't even hug. Yeah. It was more like we're so far away from each other. And I think I finally did say yes after I realized. Oh. So
you let me put the rig on, so.
Yeah. And then I saw it, and I took it immediately off and said, you can put this back in the box. I can't wear this at work.
Oh.
I didn't want to lose it.
Yeah. She's also a police officer, Chicago police officer, with the bike unit. She's one of the great cops you see around the bicycle unit. So,
congrats to them.
And this is the greatest love story. I love this so much.
It's like almost a movie.
But I would also say this, and again, I say this with full love, because I think this is great, but there's no way Aaron was going to say no. Even if there was, and I don't think, I'm not saying that she would have, but you know, like,
what do you mean, after he proved he was a hero?
He runs the hot chocolate race in full SWAT gear,
right,
saves a life, and then says, will you marry me? And
she
says, well, let's just slow things down. You're not going to say no.
I think she knows she's got a good guy there. I mean,
he's got a great gal there.
She's passed a couple of serious tests. So, yeah, I do wish them the best. Congratulations to them.
Number three,
multiple employees were fired from a Buffalo Wild Wings restaurant. This is out of Naperville today, a story that a lot of people are talking about. Some customers, you hear what happened? They said that their group was asked to move to another table because of the color of their skin. Justin Vall and Marcus Riley said they visited the Buffalo Wild Wings with four other adults, 12 children, after a youth basketball tournament. They wanted to go there to celebrate the birthday of one of the kids. As employees set up the table to seat the group, a host asked Val what his ethnicity is. I think she asked what his race is. Val said that he asked why that mattered. It shouldn't. He said the host explained that one of the restaurant's regular customers seated nearby doesn't want black people sitting near him. Later, a manager asked the group to move to another location. because that nearby customer didn't want to sit near black people. The group then left the restaurant to dine and celebrate the birthday somewhere else. Naperville Mayor Steve Tirico says the alleged behavior that took place in this city is simply unacceptable.
It sounds like it was just an awful experience. Well, I think it'd be naive to think that it doesn't happen. We know that people are out there who have racist views, and that's just unfortunate. That's unacceptable. To not have had a person in there who's trained and understands the importance of treating people properly. It's a reflection of our city because it's out there in social media, and that's disappointing, but I don't believe it's very representative of our city.
The story's insane.
It is.
I mean, it's not shocking. Sadly, it's not shocking that some idiot customer in a restaurant would say something as stupid and bigoted and ignorant as saying, I don't want to sit near black people. It's horrible, but not shocking. The shocking thing is that first the host and then the manager of the mm-hmm. restaurant didn't throw that guy out on his ass and say, never come back to our restaurant mm-hmm. again. That instead they asked this group to move
and asked
for the
what,
benefit of the racist.
What
That's
race
the
you are.
Stunning thing.
You're right, Richard. It seemed like there were so many opportunities here to correct this, right? There were so many opportunities. It seemed to go up the chain of the restaurant and back down to the point where they even returned and said, well, that table's reserved already. You know, the one you were already seating at, we were sitting you at? It's reserved. And then they said, well, how could that be reserved? There's no reserve sign on it. We were just about to sit there. It seems like you're doing these gymnastics to try to serve the racist needs of a customer
who happens to be a regular customer. Are you
customer.
Kidding me?
Why wouldn't you ask him to leave? I get it. This is really lit
it's
up
bizarre.
Because this woman just took to Facebook to say, hey, here's what happened. And she broke it down line by line. Yeah. You know, this is what happened. And I turned it into a moment to teach these young kids about racism. Sadly, this is what that became. It was a birthday celebration that turned into something like that.
Exactly.
Very sad. All right. Checking in.
Number two.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
Got to go
but
away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you drop
so
in.
Nice.
I'll hold your hands, they're just like
My
ice.
We know that song, Dee Martin's Baby, It's Cold Outside, and we know that it's created controversy over the years as people say it doesn't exist, doesn't seem the same way in the lens of today, and there's been criticism of the song. Well, now, John Legend's new take on Baby, It's Cold Outside, which he sings with Kelly Clarkson on his upcoming Christmas album, has been met with complaints by some that he has ruined this holiday classic music by including fresh lyrics to emphasize consent. Following complaints last year that the song, written in 1944, promoted date rape and sexual harassment, with some radio stations banning it from their holiday playlists, Legend added lyrics like, it's your body and your choice. Legend's lyrics are also more receptive to this date's protests, offering to call her a ride instead. Deanna Martin, the daughter of the late Rat Pack star, whose 1959 version of the song is arguably the most famous, appeared on Good Morning Britain on Monday to slam John Legend and Clarkson in this interview.
You do not change the lyrics to the song. He's made it more sexual with those words that he has just said.
Yes.
It's absolutely absurd, and he should keep it. And I think what he's done is he's stealing the thunder from Frank Lesser's song and from my dad. He should write his own song if
Absolutely.
He doesn't like this one. But don't change the lyrics. It's
Dana.
A classic, perfect song.
Why is everyone so obsessed with this?
Oh,
I don't
God.
Know.
I know. I wrote a column like 15 years ago pointing out, like, okay, this is a little funky, but
I think we all knew.
But it's like, yeah, it's from 1944. And then it's kind of a dopey song, too. This is not a Christmas song. It's a dopey holiday song.
But Lauren, what were you saying? Your reaction is that it's not perfect. Obviously, you see
it
in a different way.
I get that people were they made an uproar about it last year, but we have, in my lifetime, forever known that that song was creepy, especially the, hey, what's in this drink? You know, basically insinuating that she is being overserved or, you know, something else.
In the lens of today, but I think at the time, did anybody look at it that way?
No, it's only reason, and I love John Legend, but Lorna, how about just letting it go? To write a new song seems...
Just don't do it.
Yeah, just don't do it.
I kind of agree. Like, either don't do it, you can't just change the lyrics.
I mean, listen, Santa Claus is Coming to Town sounds like a stalker movie anyway. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. What's that all about? It better be good, for goodness sake. You're threatening the children with a stranger in a red suit who comes from I don't know where. somewhere, and he's coming down the chimney now, and he's been watching you all year long and making a list.
What's
up with that guy?
What's wrong with threatening children? That's what we do as parents.
He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. You better watch
out.
Oh, my
gosh.
You better not cry.
I'd love
to hear that. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Matt Nagy wasn't that mad at halftime.
No, I bet he wasn't. That's the problem.
Like,
I love your reading of all the
posters of Claus should be up in the neighborhood. Have you seen this man? He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake.
Oh, it does sound kind of creepy when you say it that way.
Block your
chimneys. You ruined it for me, Rich.
You have
to
ruin that. I'm not going to be able to play that this holiday.
You're leaving food for the guy that's breaking into the house. What kind of lesson are you teaching the kids?
I remember the days when we were just seeing mommy kiss Santa Claus.
Yes. Yeah. What about that?
Maybe mommy didn't want to be kissed. Okay. Let's move on. We're
Mom's
go
a tramp. She's kissing the same guy that just broke into the house.
Else.
And you're worried about Dean Martin.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Thank you for ruining Christmas. Checking in at...
We just launched a war on Christmas. I thought we defeated the war on Christmas.
One.
I thought the war was over on Christmas.
Apparently it's back.
Reignited it. Thank you, Richard.
Stalker.
You're actually kind of right there. I'm rethinking those lyrics. A 17-year-old Fortnite superstar gamer has been banned for life for cheating. I didn't know you could cheat on Fortnite. But Faze Jarvis certainly figured it out. He has built up a massive following, including 2 million subscribers on YouTube. And he's been banned now from using aimbots.
Oh, classic aimbot story.
Has anybody heard of aimbots? I have not. But he was using aimbots in an illegal hack that essentially auto-focuses your weapons on opponents.
Oh, so he's not even good.
Yeah. It's like putting it on an autopilot, right?
Classic aimbots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he used the aimbots, making it much easier to hit your target and get the kills you need in order to succeed in this game of Fortnite. It's the gaming version of steroids, they call it. Jarvis admitted, to using the bots in an emotional video, very emotional, in which he chokes back tears to reveal the punishment he received from Epic Games, the company that is behind Fortnite.
It's obvious that I made a massive mistake. And of course, I would never think about doing anything like this again. You know, when I was making those videos, I never thought about the consequence. Like, just waking up, being able to play the game, it's just so much fun. And now I can't play Fortnite at all. I've been permanently banned. Like, I just know now that I can never go to any other events or, like, even be a part of the Fortnite community. You know, I love this game so much. I'm still gonna love this game. You know, I'm still gonna love this game. No matter what happens, like, I just wish I could have known how badly I was messing up, because I would never have ever thought of even making those kind of videos if I knew that this could have actually happened. I know now how big of a mistake this was, and like, it's just, there's nothing I can...
Had a good run.
Yeah. Well. You didn't know cheating was bad? Really. He's a little too attached to his Fortnite, I'm going to say. That was my read on that.
His chances of losing his virginity have gone up 47% now that he won't have to play Fortnite for a while.
So. Thank you, Richard. Then we're going to close it out with that happy thought.
Five at five.
Thank you, Kim. The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Richard Roper, sitting in for Ro today. All right, do you feel like you have enough content in your home, or are you considering some of these new streaming? I feel like I do, but then I see what the streaming services are offering. Disney's coming out, launching next week. Apple TV launched over the weekend with
Correct.
The morning show and a couple other, one other show, Rich?
Two or three other shows. Apple TV Plus now has their offerings available to folks, and we talked about this a little bit last week, too. People, you know, there are various ways that you're going to pay for this. One way or another, you're going to pay for it. There are a lot of free trials, and sometimes it's bundled in with other, you know, services you have. But as you said, I think most people don't know actually how much they spend per month on their entertainment.
Add it up, I think I'd be
budget.
Horrified if I did. But then you see, okay, so I watch the morning show, and I know you have a lot to say about it. It's Jennifer Aniston, Steve Carell. You've got even
Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah. They're like the talent is phenomenal. The budget is outrageous.
$15 million an episode. And for people who don't know, it's set at a fictional network morning television show that's been doing very well, very, very much like the Today Show, but it's not, it's a total fictionalized thing. And of course, Anna, you were an anchor on these types of shows.
Show.
I've been on shows like this. It's always interesting when a television series or a movie is about the profession that you know the
attempts
most about.
Attempts to take a stab at that thing.
You always hear from cops who tell you what's wrong with cop shows, or lawyers who say that would never happen. And it's fiction, but the setup is intriguing. Jennifer Aniston and Steve Carell were the co-hosts of the number one rated show for about 15 years. On morning television. Steve Carell's character has been summarily dismissed in a Me Too type story. He was having multiple affairs with underlings. He's been let go. Now Jennifer Aniston is out there to face the world.
She says her TV husband is now known as a predator or as a, you know.
Yeah. So we actually have a little clip here. So first person you're going to hear, this is Steve Carell's character, already starting to mount a strategy and thinking about how he can defend himself. And then the second part of this clip is Jennifer Aniston's character meeting with all the men in the boardroom at the network who are trying to tell her how they should proceed.
Just for a second, let's look at the larger context of hashtag Me Too. I feel that people are screaming for an honest conversation.
The part you guys never seem to realize is that you don't have the power anymore.
Are you actually trying to justify your actions?
I'm not listening. I don't need to justify anything. You all are so convinced that you are the rightful owner of all of the power that it doesn't even occur to you that someone else could be in the driver's seat.
It was a very powerful moment. And I thought she was excellent, Jennifer Aniston, in this. I mean, really just complex. And you liked her even when she was unlikable. And she just, it broke out because you were asking earlier about how when it's portraying a profession that you've done before. At first, I thought it was very one-dimensional. The very beginning, it was the younger Southern Belle taking over for the older female anchor. And the executive only cares about ratings. And the way the first episode went, I would not judge the other two episodes. Takes turns that were just remarkable, and I thought the dialogue was amazing.
So you felt that, and I kind of agree with you step by step that, you know, the first three episodes that I was able to see, that you were able to see, there's going to be, you know, it's actually going to be two seasons for sure. They've already signed on. But if you judge it just by the first episode, I wouldn't have recommended it. I would have given it like 2 stars.
I was rolling my eyes and asking my husband to change the channel.
And I think part of it was because they were trying to jam too much in there.
Like
and
the setup of the characters.
And getting to know the Reese Witherspoon character, and then Billy Crudup as a network executive, and then Jennifer Aniston's home life and all the things going on. Then the second episode I thought was better. Then the third I thought really started hitting its stride. So as you were saying, I think it's one of those shows that it finds its legs after kind of stumbling out of the gate.
Yeah, I would agree. I would totally agree with that. I just, you know, Brian Stelter's book, Top of the Morning, the CNN correspondent, media correspondent, is loosely the platform that they built some of this dialogue and the circumstances around it. And you can see the Matt Lauer character sort of plays in that Steve Carell
person.
I mean, they very give him strongly.
The beard and everything.
And the button in the office that he hits when the producer that, closed the door. That he wants to be alone
and
with.
And even the moment, there's an actress by the name of M. Bith Davids who doesn't have a huge role at the beginning, but she plays his wife. But she has a great moment because they're at their giant home, like I think outside of New York. And he's complaining, and he's meeting with the lawyers, and he's talking about, well, she says to him, actually, because after he gets done complaining, because he keeps saying, you know, they were consensual affairs, they wanted it, and she's just standing there, and she finally gets a moment to speak, and she says, I'm picking up the kids from school, I'm taking them to our house in the Hamptons, and by the way, I'm getting a divorce. And that's almost exactly what happened, unfortunately, in Matt Lauer's life, you know, in terms of the family. You have to feel bad always, of course, for the children. So, you know, some of that, you know, that domestic drama, I felt they get right. And I did think they got, you know, some of the small details, you know, including you see a lot of these characters when their alarms go off at 3:30 in the morning. And we both know what that feeling's like. Uh-huh. And you're already awake because you can't sleep because you know you have to get up at 3:30 from the night before, and showing everybody kind of coming to work in the dark. But of course, you know, if you're a cameraman, you're coming to work in the dark on the train. If you're the anchor, you're coming in the dark in the limousine, at least at the network level. So it got, and even like the control room and the sets and everything, I thought they did a pretty good job. It felt realistic. And as you mentioned, the expense that they you know, a lot of it is
huge.
is the $2 million an episode that Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, and Steve Carell are getting. So that's a $6 million start
and
to your budget.
And aren't they executive producers too?
Yeah, Reese, so they got a piece of the show. But I would also agree with you about the Jennifer Aniston performance. You know, she's always been a good actress, but you know, she's always going to be Rachel on Friends to a lot of people. She's done comedy. She's done some pretty good drama. I think this might be the best opportunity for her to play a fully dimensional, three-dimensional character and I think because of that, she's lived a lot more life than what she had as an actress when she started on Friends 20 years ago. You can see that informing her performance.
Even some of, there was some overlap you kind of thought would in her own life when she says you have to control the narrative,
yes,
or it controls you, and what they say about you in the media can become the reality to so many people. You wonder in her personal life how often that might have been the case when she's been so much tabloid fodder over the years. Like, she, if only she could get married. I mean,
exactly.
Married. If only finally she found a husband now. If only she could have children. And, oh, gosh, her life's ruined. And just,
it's amazing because you're absolutely right.
Back at that.
She has. And, you know, you people can say, oh, look, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon have had these amazing careers.
They're
worth millions and millions of dollars. But they still had to go through a different struggle and a different path than their male counterparts, no matter how successful you are. And as you just mentioned, the Jennifer Aniston, for 20 years it's been, I hope she can find happiness. Oh,
hope
she got her heart broken by, you know, by Brad, or
Justin.
Oh, I thought it was going to work out with Justin. And nobody writes those articles about Leonardo DiCaprio ever. And he's essentially the same age as Jennifer Aniston, a few years younger. And he's never found, you know, a committed relationship.
Uh-huh.
And nobody ever says, oh, I wish if only Leo could
find
complete
the right
his life by settling down, when Leo just trades in the round of 21-year-olds for the next, you know, models that he brings on the runway.
No,
but he never has to put up with that, and he also doesn't have to put up with that on the set. Like, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon have spoken, even when they've made it big time in their careers, they've found themselves in studio offices or, you know, boardrooms on movie sets where people are kind of talking past them to the other guys
for
in the
sure
room.
It's fascinating too how many big players make cameos or are in small roles in this show. They just pop up out of nowhere. Like you say, Martin Short, he's there, and then Mindy Kaling is there, and then there's Sherry Belafonte plays one of the producer types, and just
lots of
names and faces that you recognize kind of coming in and out of this.
Yeah, Martin Short plays basically a Woody Allen-esque director who wants to bond with Steve Carell's deposed network guy, and he starts sharing stories, and you see the horror on Steve Carell's face when he's like, I'm not nearly as bad as you. You're way worse. You're criminally worse. And it's again, Martin Short's a very, very funny guy, but the way he plays this basically serious dramatic role is pretty impressive.
It was
so
an interesting
The morning
exchange.
Show, Apple TV Plus, is now available.
And it's three episodes that they have available now. They're going to release one per week.
Yes.
Moving forward, which disappointed me because right when you get into it is when they said, we're not going to do this whole binge viewing thing. Apple TV is going to kind of get you and keep you there, presumably to let you make you watch some of their other shows.
They want you to have that classic week-to-week experience that a lot of big budget shows to this day, you know, you still, when Game of Thrones was coming out, you didn't get a chance. Some of these shows, they'll give you the whole season at once. You know, hey, the new season of, you know, Succession is available or whatever, but not this show. And I will tell you this without giving anything away. Shocking turns and twists on the morning show. It doesn't just follow just a predictable path.
That's good to hear. I already am feeling that right now after three episodes. All right, when we come back here, we're going to check traffic, but we want to talk about that Krispy Kreme donut story, the college student who traveled 500 miles round trip to go pick up the Krispy Kremes, was then reselling them back home in Minnesota. Our text line and phone line lit up when we were talking about that, because then we moved into how far have you traveled or where would you drive a long distance in order to find the food that you love, and we want to talk a little bit more about that, but first let's check traffic, and here's Lauren for that. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is here, and the texts are already starting to come in. What would you drive a great distance to go get? What food do you love that either now or during your childhood or at some point you've decided to get in the car and drive? We're talking about that Krispy Kreme donut guy. He's a college kid who generated not national but international attention when he put on a Facebook post to say that Krispy Kreme has shut him down. He was selling them. He was traveling 500 miles round trip to Clive, Iowa, to pick up the donuts because he loved the Krispy Kremes. And then he'd bring them back, post on his Facebook page, hey, do you want to buy Krispy Kremes? And people would come and buy them. And he had a little side gig out of this. He was making some money. It got so big that they picked it up in a local paper there in Minnesota that he was doing this, kind of like, hey, isn't this fun? Called Krispy Kreme headquarters and asked him, isn't this great? No, they didn't think it was great. They basically sent out a cease and desist, and they said it was a, quote, liability. Well, some good news to report there. Just this afternoon or early this evening, apparently Krispy Kreme has made a deal with him and said that he is going to be okay. He is now allowed to sell the Krispy Kremes as a registered kind of outlet for them.
There you go. Cream. That's what they needed to do.
If you're Krispy Kreme, aren't you just like, okay, let's build a location there?
I know, at this
let's
point.
Build a shop. Well,
that's more expensive than paying him.
A lot of the backlash, too, was because, you know, this kid was using the money to pay off his student debt, so people were going like, come on, man, he's trying to pay his loan back. So they also recognized a public relations opportunity. I would also like to note that this kid is a senior accounting major, and at some point, he was going to make his 20th run this weekend. At some point, wouldn't it have occurred to him when he went to make his run that he'd make a connection there at the Krispy Kreme store and say, okay, here's some boxes with some overnight or same delivery day labels. You're going to put the donuts in the boxes, uh-huh. Ship them to me. I'll pay you for that. They'll still be fresh and I can sell them instead of driving 540 uh-huh. miles round trip.
Yeah. I'd agree.
I guess not having the location, that's the appeal, right?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, he's bringing it there. It's like you said earlier, Rich, where you couldn't get a certain beer. People bringing it makes it that much more exciting. Like, cool, we shouldn't be having this, but we have it.
You want what you can't have.
We 100%, right. Lauren is right. We all fall for this. We have forever. We just did it with the crispy chicken sandwich a while ago. It's the beer that you can't get in your hometown that somebody else can get. It's anything that you can't have that somebody else can get access to that makes you feel like you're getting something cool. That when Krispy Kreme first opened in the Chicago area, there were
lines
around the block. And every office, every place in the Chicago area, somebody would come in with the donuts that day. I got them.
As the story became viral, went viral throughout the day, Krispy Kreme started to look pretty bad. As you point out, Rich, here's a kid who's just sort of doing this side business. No one seemed to be unhappy with it. No one got sick from any donuts. There was no problem at all. He was just supplying a demand that wasn't there. I mean, there was a lot of demand and there was no supply. So he was filling that need. Now, Listen, here's what they're saying. They're saying now we've just offered him a sweet deal. He can continue as an independent operator, make up for his lost run. They're going to throw in 500 dozen free donuts.
I mean, they should already be filming the commercial. This is Jason Gonzalez. He's a 21-year-old college student in Minnesota. Every morning for the last, show him getting up out of bed and making the run and everything. That's your deal. That's your move.
Listener texts in, I drive 1,000 miles to eat barbecue ribs at Miller's Pub. A little shout out to Miller's.
Oh, he says, Miller's best in the world. Let me give a little.
There it is.
I was a little far away, but
it's the same reason that a lot of the major,
look at In-N-Out.
Yeah, people go nuts for In-N-Out burgers unless you live in Los Angeles. And you go, they're one of the many places we can go. And that's why a lot of the major Chicago, famous pizza places now will send frozen deep dish to your relatives and friends. You can do it for a Christmas gift or whatever.
And I know people who have moved away who totally take advantage of that. They want the deep dish pizza. They want our hot dogs. They want all the stuff. The Garrett's popcorn, another one.
Absolutely.
People just send them to their friends.
That was one of the brilliant moves when Garrett's first opened in the airport at O'Hare. Because they got everybody coming and going then. So people would say, there was a Modern Family episode where Cam had to get like a tin of Garrett's popcorn back to California because he had a layover at O'Hare.
We have Yingling's beer. I drive to Indiana for Yingling's beer. Am I saying that right? Have you guys heard Yingling?
I love Yingling. That's what I was saying earlier. Yingling, my brother, lives
in Georgia. I drive
there
for fireworks and cigarettes, but it's the same reason.
Same run.
And to bet on sports.
Start a little side business.
And to bet on sports now, too. Go to Indiana.
They got everything there. Why not just being in the city? The Taco Bell and the Dairy Queens are hard to find. So when I'm on a road trip, I'll want to pull over for one of those. You get the craving because it's kind of one of those things, those comfort foods. You like them.
Yeah, if you go west, you got to get In-N-Out and document it on Instagram.
How about this one?
Those are rules now.
Yeah. At least once a year, my daughter and I drive from Palatine to Walworth, Wisconsin to visit Maggie Moo's Dairy Ripple for an order of widgets.
Or what about like Redimax? It is worth that hour-ish drive.
New Buffalo? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's true. That's another. What is the Miggy Moo Wiggly Who? What is that?
I don't know.
Are we still talking about food there?
I hope that's not code. Wisconsin for a spotted cow. Wisconsin for spotted cow.
Sure,
we know that, right?
So no-brainer.
Brat stops, all that stuff. Well, as Lauren said, whatever you can't get, that's all of a sudden, if they open that Krispy Kreme franchise right there where the kid goes to school, it'll just do whatever it does. It's not going to be the sensation because now it's not something that's hard to get.
Yeah, I remember driving to Superdog begging my parents to go there,
too.
All right, thank you for your comments. Thanks for your calls. And we're going to have the news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the top of the hour. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper sitting in on this Monday. Thank you for joining us, making us part of your day. Our favorite pet expert is here, Steve Dale. You know him.
Maybe
you're
only one. I don't know.
Well, unless we're cheating on you.
What?
We don't. We love you, Steve Dale.
Thank you.
And you can go to stevedalepetworld.com if you want to find out all things about dog, cat, pet health. Is it more than just dogs and cats on that?
Yeah, sometimes. So I just wrote about you guys like politics.
Big politics in California. Mm-hmm. The Fish and Game Commission says ferrets, domestic ferrets, are not domestic. And they are the only state except Hawaii. And I understand why Hawaii has not legalized ferrets. But California, it's ridiculous. Ferrets should be legal in California.
To like have as pets. Are. You're pro-ferret.
Yeah. I am pro-ferret. I am running on the pro-ferret.
It's very controversial.
In California, among three people, but... and they're ridiculous because they say the ferrets are going to get out and reproduce everywhere. Well, they're spayed or neutered when people purchase them. So I'm not sure how that can happen.
That's what they're worried about, the reproduction of the ferrets?
Well, yeah.
Is ferret adoption a problem? After they're spayed and neutered, do they go out and adopt other ferrets? I know they're advanced, but not that sophisticated.
No, they're not.
Listen, as the ferret goes, so goes California when you're campaigning. You know that.
They
have
a couple of crazy laws in California, but that's not what you're
Do you know actually who hates ferrets?
Who?
Rudy Giuliani.
How do we know that about him?
Because he goes on tirades about ferrets. And New York, when he was mayor, inexplicably banned ferrets. I have no clue. So he used to do a radio talk show.
Might have been an incident with an earlier part of his life. We don't know.
I just like to ban alligators.
I didn't know that about Rudy. That's interesting.
Yes.
Ferret. Okay.
All right, Steve Dale, you're also here to talk about a number of things regarding our pets, including dog flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a cute little way of telling us all, don't wait, vaccinate.
Yes, because...
That was your thing.
Yeah, that is my thing, because dog flu is still in Chicago. Dog flu hit Chicago, one of the two kinds of dog flu. So there are different strains of human flu, lots of different strains, right? And I guess the experts at the CDC take their best stab at it. I'm sure it's a very educated guess.
It is. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, we've had them on the show to talk about
every year to determine, okay, that strain. Right. In the dog world, there are only two strains in America. Mm-hmm. So you get a vaccine for one strain or the other strain, depending on where you live, or both strains, and you're done. Why is it important? Because dog flu does kill 2-5% of dogs. And unlike the human flu, it's not seasonal, except this is the time of year when people board or kennel their dog the most often. So therefore, dogs are around other dogs the most often. Yeah. It is very infectious, as it is in people.
But with dogs, they go up in each other's, everything and kind of smell and get involved and stuff in ways that humans don't. So it's
like
even
that,
more contagious, I would imagine.
Yeah, you're right about that. And also, because there's been no previous exposure to either H3N2 or H3N8, the two strains in dogs, they are going to get it if they're exposed. And what's really tricky, are you ready for the tricky part?
Ready.
Okay,
I think
so. What's really tricky is that of all those dogs that get the flu, 100% exposed, 20% don't have symptoms. Ooh. So they get the virus, they're okay, which is good for that dog, but they still are contagious. So even though they're not sneezing all over the other dogs because they're not sneezing, they don't have symptoms, they still are very contagious.
I remember, what was that, a couple of years ago when people weren't taking their dogs to dog parks because it was an outbreak of the dog flu that people were like, I'm not taking a chance.
Yeah, it all began with one of those two strains right here in Chicago, the other in Florida, but right here in Chicago with H3N2. Thousands of dogs were sickened. So do the math, 2-5% die of dog flu. So it's not a big percent, but if it's your dog,
that's the only percent that's going to matter.
Yeah. They're members of the family.
So Steve, what you're saying is you're better off just getting the shot because you might not see any symptoms until, sadly and tragically, it would be too late to do anything.
Well, if the dog is sick, then the dog can get sicker and sicker. Or, like with human flu, some people just get better on their own.
Sure.
That happens all the time. But it's, first of all, very difficult because most people, they share their bedrooms with their dogs. How about you guys?
I think we do. We didn't used to, but that has evolved into often the dog jumps in the bed.
We've had conversations over the last couple of years about that. There was a time where Jax was my roommate. Now he's got his own bed and his own space, and he's cool with it. But no, you're absolutely right. And there's always there's at least once, even people that never let the dog into the bed, they occasionally let the dog into the bed.
Sure, and I say that only because it's not contagious to people, by the way. But I do say that only because if you have a sneezing dog and a wheezing dog that you can't do much about because you can't give them human cough medicine, that's a no-no.
Oh, now I got to read it. Yeah, write that down again.
Can't take like Robitussin.
No,
no, don't do it.
No, 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 no.
Efrin.
No, none of that. No, I wouldn't cough drops don't even work. You know,
Jameson. So
they don't suck on
a little Irish whiskey on the tip of the finger. Not a good idea
none
either,
of that?
Right?
No.
Oh, well, maybe the Irish whiskey part, but I'm not endorsing it.
Never,
except
never.
For maybe Irish setters.
Because that's part of their breed.
Yeah.
You said boarding around the holidays. A lot of people, when they go, they do go away, and the dogs
so
sometimes stay.
Thank you for getting me back on track.
Yeah,
so,
you're welcome.
I appreciate that. So here's the thing. The number of people that do that at this time of year is more than any other time of year. Having said that, more and more boarding facilities now mandate the dog flu, especially in Chicago, because of the prior experience we've had. Hmm. They've had to close down in previous years for a week or a couple days. They lose money. They don't want that to happen. They also can get bad PR that way. So instead, they say, we mandate the dog flu vaccine, but here's the tricky part. No trick or treat here, just the tricky part.
Mm-hmm.
That with the dog flu, unlike the human flu vaccine where it's one shot and you're done, with the dog flu, you get an initial injection, and then 3 weeks later, there's a booster. So you have to plan 4 weeks in advance. So if you're the type of person that says, oh, it's 3 days before I'm going away. I'm going away just before Christmas, and now I'm going to give thy dog the dog flu vaccine so I can get into the kennel. That's not going to work.
Okay, so you need that advanced thing. The good thing is, though, just take a different route because the pup won't remember the shot from 3 weeks previous when you're going. If the kid's going to know. If you're taking your kid in for the second shot, like, I know where we're going. And a lot of dogs figure that stuff out, too.
They
though,
smell
Steve.
Something, though. I swear, because my dog initially, the first few times, didn't. But now when I take her in through those first few doors, no way. She digs the nails
in. You tricked
in.
Me. I thought we were going to see Grandma or the park or any place but here.
You didn't lie and say, we're going to the park.
Never. Don't
you?
Do
okay.
that.
But they know.
They do know. So this is why I'm a huge proponent of fear-free veterinarians and fear-free veterinary clinics that minimize fear, anxiety, and stress of going to the clinic so the dogs don't do that. So there are videos I show at veterinary conferences. You may have noticed one arm is like 8 inches longer than the other. And that is because whenever we get near the clinic, my dogs, who walk at my side pretty well, are dragging me down the street to get into.
What?
I show you the video.
That's awesome.
Yep. And,
why would they be? What?
They love it. They love it there. And not only that, when they run in, they run directly to the scale. They sit on the scale.
Wow.
The challenge is getting them to do it one at a time because it's two dogs.
Your dogs weigh 48 and a half pounds together. Yeah. Do the math.
But they sit on the scale and they wait for a treat. They know to do that. I can show you video. I did a Facebook Live of this. This is true. I did a Facebook Live of that. And I got these comments back to your point, Anna. This must be edited. Now, you're the movie expert. I don't know how to edit a Facebook
Yeah, there's no
Live.
Trickery here.
No.
I can vouch for Steve on that.
No, I don't know how you would do that even. So,
but then
I did it
nothing
again.
Traumatic must have ever happened at the vet. Because don't they remember that when they smell where they're going?
Yeah, they have stuff happen just like other dogs. So one of our two dogs is over 15 years old now or about that. And she's had over 15 years. Things happen to her at the veterinary clinic. But we always try our best anyway to make it a positive experience. Not only me, but the veterinary technicians and the veterinarians there as well.
All right, so we want to take a break and check traffic here, but then when we get back, I want to ask you about there was a puppy stolen from the Anti-Cruelty Society, and you have some exclusive information about that. But I hope it leads to the return, because right now that is not the case. And you also want to give a word of warning about tying dogs up outside restaurants and places like that. So Steve Dale is here, The Rokan Show, with me, Anna DeBlantis, Richard Roper sitting in. Lauren, how does the traffic look right now? All right, our guest is Steve Dale. You know him, you love him. From WGN Radio and other places. He's a pet expert. He also can be found at, you can learn all things about pets at SteveDalePetWorld.com. That is the place to go.
I think
so, too. And you had some new information you wanted to tell us about. There was that story about a little puppy, an adorable little puppy, just stolen from the Anti-Cruelty Society. I guess some kids were in there, distracted people, and boom, the puppy was gone.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Very
sad. Yeah, I don't know if the purpose is to resell the animal or what.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
Right? What's going on?
Yeah, 2 to 3 months old is it, so it's a very small animal, so I guess easy to take. You know, I hope that the police, I don't know that they need to release this video to the public. I mean, there may have been kids involved, apparently, so they can't do that. But what they can do is view the video, and I'm told, at least as of a couple of hours ago, they really, aren't putting, you know, there's an animal here. It's not anything done to a person. And if that is the attitude of the CPD, I would be very disappointed. My experience with the police actually is very different about companion animals.
Yeah.
So my hope is that they will at least look at the video that they apparently do have, not only in store from this happened at a PetSmart in the South Loop, but the kids walked in with Walgreens bags, and presumably, I don't know this, they probably, though, went to the Walgreens that's right around the corner from there. In any case, the Anti-Cruelty Society announced a day or so ago they're offering a reward.
Oh, good.
And they told me today to tell you, because I happen to be there, who wouldn't spend some time at Anti-Cruelty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I said, do you have a dollar amount for that? Can I announce it? And they said yes. So it's $1,000.
Great.
But presumably you'll save this puppy's, potentially, save this puppy's life. You
because
know?
You wonder if someone who would go to the extent of stealing this puppy doesn't seem like you would necessarily have good intentions, but you leave the puppy
$1,000, and especially if they're saying no questions asked, I think is the main thing, is they want to save this animal. So someone brings them in. And for the original reports, I think, Stephen, and we heard at least two, maybe three individuals. Well, as you guys well know, if two or three people do something, someone's going to speak to someone else. It's going to get out there. Someone knows, outside of even whoever took this pup, where this pup is or what happened to it.
No
so
question.
Hopefully someone will hear about that grand and say, you know what? I'm bringing that dog in.
I'll get $1,000.
I didn't take it. I'm bringing it in. And so that would be the best possible outcome.
If you have, I agree. And thank you. And if you have information, 312-644-8338 and dial 0.
Is that the number to the Anti-Cruelty Society?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly
so you
right.
can also look that up separately if you want to.
Or you can call the police, I'm sure. 312-644-8338. Or just and dial 0 or call the Chicago Police Department.
And it leads us to another issue where you talk about when you tie the dogs up outside. And Rich and I have both experienced this as dog walkers and dog owners. You walk around the neighborhood, you see a dog tied up outside a Starbucks, tied out outside a restaurant.
I'm stunned when I see that. Supposedly, the neighborhood where nothing like this would happen. There is no such neighborhood, first of all. And you see some pup tied to a chair outside the coffee shop or whatever where someone's just running in. Well, that's all it takes is the 2 minutes, right, Steve?
Yeah.
Do you see that?
Yeah, it's against law, actually. I helped write that law. So
to tie a dog up.
Look at
right.
you.
Yeah. So in other cities, it's not. Chicago's very rare.
Huh.
It's actually, but the police don't know that and they have other things to enforce.
Sure,
and
sure.
Yeah, it's law or no law, it's just not the right thing to do. Very few dogs aren't distressed. They're barking when you tie them up for a reason.
Yeah.
Or that the way in which you tie them up, what if it gets loose? And dogs run off, and they actually do. That happens more frequently than you think, and the dog runs off into traffic or just runs off, which isn't good. Or you're in the store, someone comes around the corner with a dog that isn't very good with other dogs, and now your dog gets bitten.
Oh,
or someone goes to pet your dog and pulls your dog tail because that someone is 7 years old and doesn't know any better.
Right.
And then you're accused of your dog biting someone. Mm-hmm. Did that happen? Didn't that happen? Now you're involved in a lawsuit. All of that and more is avoided. I'm also concerned, not yet, thank goodness, about weather. You know, so people leave their dogs out in extreme weather. Ah, he'll be okay. Well, maybe.
No,
but the dog is shivering for a reason.
Yeah,
right.
So exactly. I'm not
it's
a fan of that.
It's too cold for them, too, right?
Yeah.
My local dog park, I went to the little little area where all the doggies go and play, and they've got a sign up that says stolen, and this particular dog, they said, was tied up outside, and they named the restaurant. I'm not trying to shame anybody. I'm just saying they just thought it was a harmless thing, and they went in to get their food, and then they came out, dog was gone.
It happens all the time, unfortunately. And then people sometimes resell the dogs. I know I've been approached. Can you buy this dog?
I've had that too. Isn't that weird? And I was like, wait a minute. Who are you? That seems a little suspicious.
Yeah, very much so. And I would also say, just from the standpoint of a human relationship, if you're the person who brings the dog to the store or the coffee shop or whatever and ties the dog up and you come out and something has happened, good luck going home ever again and explaining that to your significant other what happened to Bubbles.
They'll kick you
or
out.
Or Fluffy, because you're done. Yeah.
Okay,
honey, I got you that almond latte you wanted. Where's Fluffles? Well,
long story.
I was hit over the head. Yeah, don't let that even happen.
Yeah,
Steve Daly, you've just come back from a cat conference. I didn't know that was a thing.
Richard and I were there.
I was like, wait, first of all, cat conference, like half of the people just to like imitate cats and go, I can't be bothered. You're not the boss of me.
Or you just all move in different directions and you won't come together
Welcome
in
to
one
cat conference.
Come on, everybody.
Scratching posts in the lobby.
Over here. He's going to speak. Get together. Is that what happens?
He was just here a minute ago. I haven't seen that person in 6 days.
This is a veterinary conference, the American Association of Feline Practitioners. My job there was actually to to judge a contest by veterinary students who were coming up with ways to enrich cats' environments.
Nice.
Really creative ways using technology. But the big news from the conference, the most common allergy.
Hearing it here first.
What do you think? Yeah, actually, yes. The most, except I talked about it on my show. Oh. But beside that, the most common allergy, what do you think it is?
For cats?
Other cats.
No. For us.
Oh, for people?
People?
We're allergic mostly to
cats.
Right. So 20% of people, you could have guessed that, 20%.
I thought you meant what cats are allergic to. I was going to say, well, humans, clearly.
Actually, that can happen. Doesn't happen every day.
I don't
so 20% of humans have cat allergies of some sort.
That's right. And what you're allergic to is actually a protein in the cat's saliva called FELD1. And Purina, the Purina Institute, has found a way to neutralize this protein using an egg product.
Okay.
I mean, the science is really cool, but what matters to me also is that if people aren't allergic, fewer people will give up cats. More people will adopt cats, and you'll be able to live in the same room as your cat without taking 5,000 antihistamines.
Gotcha.
Speaking of allergies, and we only have a minute here, but the man who invented the Labradoodle bred it for the first time for a woman who had special needs and her husband was allergic, bred the Labrador with the poodle and made the Labradoodle, is so upset that he created this. He said, I've created a Frankenstein because people are taking on this breed. It's an expensive breed now, and they're puppy mills, and there are people who are doing all kinds of things, and they have a lot of issues.
I totally agree with that, and I'm glad he fessed up, but now there's everything doodle. Mm-hmm. There's a cockadoodle. There's, I mean, you name the breed.
Because the poodle is technically hypoallergenic.
It's supposed to be, but it's not even exactly that. For a lot of people, they do very well with poodles, but nevertheless, you don't know if you're getting which half you're getting, half Labrador, half poodle. What's the hair going to look like?
Is it mostly poodle? Is it mostly?
I know. And is it really going to be hypoallergenic? The answer, I guess, could be yes, but maybe not.
The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Thanks for making us part of your Monday evening. All right, we had some good news to report. Just backtracking a little bit. The Krispy Kreme guy, you know, the college student who was selling the donuts. He was traveling 500 miles round trip to sell. He went to Clive, Iowa to go back to Minnesota to sell the Krispy Kreme donuts. Put it on Facebook. Became like a little side gig for him. Got some local press, a little local pub. And then Krispy Kreme finds out about it and basically tells him, nope, you can't do that. It's a liability. Well, now Krispy Kreme has reached out and said, it's okay. You're going to be one of our licensed vendors. We're going to sort some things out, and we're going to give you 500 dozen free donuts.
You know, PR was just like running down the hallway like, wait.
Turn this into a positive. This can't be a negative. We can't look like the company, like just shutting down this kid who's trying to make money for college.
And showing that so many people love Krispy Kreme, what they're willing to go through to have some.
Like Kev says, why don't they just open a Krispy Kreme?
Exactly.
Does that seem like
create
the wrong
the demand,
answer?
I guess, right?
They're kind of whipping it up here, for sure. All right, so that ended very happily. Now, let's talk about a couple holiday-related stories that are in the news right now. Did you hear about this? Salvation Army, the kettles, the bell ringers, they are going to accept more than cash now. You can do they're in the digital age. You can use your phone.
Finally, you can't use the excuse, I don't carry any cash.
No cash, no change. No.
Well, if you pull out your phone, I can show you.
So are we just swiping our cards there on the spot?
Apple Pay, Google Pay will do the trick. The Salvation Army says their mobile pay technology is coming this season. And you can use your smartphone and make the donation. So I wonder if you could download the app.
Well, no, there's like a little sticker on the kettle that you scan, and then it'll...
Oh, like a QR code?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that's how you pay.
Thank you, Kim.
Still feels better just putting the cash in there.
Kind of like the sound of it when it drops in there. So you can get a glimpse of a gold coin in there or something. You kind
of
look in.
Sounds of the holidays.
It's worth kind of making the day of whoever's standing out there in the cold. That's usually, really, that's what gets me.
I think about that, too. It's like, yes, for the greater good of what they do, but you're like, that person is probably freezing right now. I feel bad. I can't just walk past them.
I do think of that, too, when you're just like, okay, we got to keep it exciting for them. Keep, you know, it's good cause you're giving to the Salvation Army, but also you feel bad for the people out there. They apparently 13 counties surrounding the Chicago area, the Salvation Army says, and they will be enabling mobile donations, trying to motivate the young kids to donate a little more. The ones who don't carry the cash.
The ones that don't have any cash in general.
Cash generally? Good point, Lauren. 70% of the money the Salvation Army collects for the year comes during the holiday season. Think about that. That's a big time of year.
It really is synonymous with Christmas, though. Kev, you kind of like mentioned that. Just the sound of the bells.
Oh, yeah. Walking into your local Jewel. Yeah. Walk past the bell.
Don't you guys feel bad when you walk past the bell?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to look down and away. I try to keep, like, just dollar bills in my phone or whatever for that time of year.
So apparently what they're calling kettle pay will start on Friday outside Jewel's and then go to other kettles starting Black Friday.
Oh, so it's outside the Jewel's at
yeah,
first.
Yeah, that's where it's starting at first. And then Black Friday, it'll expand.
Okay. Thank
Maybe
you.
Like a test run or something?
I guess. But they tried it last year in, it looks like, four or five cities. And it said it didn't raise as much money as they thought it would, but they still want to give people an alternative.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Last year, they raised $25 million in the city of Chicago alone. So a
Whoa.
Lot of generous people giving. Remember, it provides meals to homeless families, buys Christmas toys for children. Remember, the Salvation Army is there when there are
fires things like that. Yeah,
anything happening in our community.
Displaced people.
Just need somebody, you know. Need some help on the spot, they're there. So it's a great organization to give to. So would you do it? Would you do the download and the I guess you don't have to download, right, Kim? You just hold your phone up to the
sticker. Some kind of a sticker that will
like a QR code or something.
Well, they also will have a QR code if you don't have Apple Pay, so you have both options.
See, I think I'm just going to stick with the
other
money
bases.
Yeah, I think I'd stick with money, too.
Otherwise, I'll probably be sitting on my phone trying to figure out what I'm doing longer than it would take to just put the money in. And then I'm being forced to be out there in cold.
Yeah, everyone's like, come on, it's cold outside. Hurry up, lady.
There's like a line.
It's interesting. Well, I hope they raise more money because of it, because that's an interesting way to do anything that encourages more people to give is a good idea. Here's another story about the holidays, and tell me what you think about this, because I think this one's very personal, but there is a new study out that explains that Christmas lights and decor, all the stuff that goes up this time of year, that it makes you happier. Science says it makes you happier. Those of you itching to bring your Christmas lights out early, that maybe you're thinking about childhood, maybe there's a nostalgia to it, turning on the lights around your house and decorating around everywhere actually makes you happier, that it creates a dopamine feeling good hormone spike when you see that kind of thing.
That's what I figure it is for people that do it early, like especially putting up the tree. Because there's nothing like having the tree in the house, right? Like you turn the lights off, turn the lights on.
It
totally sets like the holiday mood, puts you in a different spot.
I'm like that with decorating my place in general. I just feel so much better all around when I feel really good in the environment I'm in, if you know what I mean.
I think there's something too to kind of just changing it up and making it festive that you feel like it's new and different. And it also brings back that
memories.
Nostalgia and the memories.
The positive connections to it.
And when it's gray and rainy and damp outside, you see those beautiful lights, it does Brian's do something for your attitude.
Anybody got the decorations up yet?
I just took the Halloween decorations down, so it's not time yet. But it will be soon.
It just comes quicker and quicker every year.
Yeah, that's what incredible. I was thinking. Watching all the commercials already over the weekend, I couldn't believe it.
Getting my coffee in the morning. The holiday cups are already out.
I think 6 days left.
Radio, 6 days left tomorrow, Christmas music starts, right? Like nonstop on some of the stations. Oh, my goodness.
Which I don't care. I mean, some people lose it. They hate Christmas music. They hate the holidays. But I'm like, whatever.
How do you not get sick of it so quickly? Because, you know, it's only so many songs repeated.
That's true.
I feel like there is something to it when the Christmas decorations go up too early. I do understand that negative reaction because I think there's a stress that goes with the holidays as well, where you already feel behind. Like, should I be shopping?
Yeah.
Should I be thinking about? I haven't even thought about Thanksgiving yet. Why am I hearing Christmas music? You just start.
We haven't made any plans,
right? I'm like, we're having a party. Do I need to be doing things? There's that piece of it, but I just
when you do clear out the decorations from inside the home, it just feels so empty.
Right.
You know, you take the tree down, take the decorations, it's like, oh, okay, all we got is just two more months of miserable cold winter here.
What to look like, forward to.
At least the decorations brighten things up a little bit.
You almost need to go from holiday to holiday.
Whatever it takes.
Keep that, like, yeah.
Well, what is Valentine's Day is not a big one. I mean, you don't really decorate, do you?
New Year's Eve, I guess.
Valentine's you can. Yeah. I don't know. Or it'd be kind of weird just having, like, heart cutouts.
St. Patrick's Day? I don't know.
There is, I bet there should be a study for that because the depression that comes when you take down the Christmas decorations and you're just locked in on the cold.
Well, that's why I like to get generic, like kind of winter decorations, you know, maybe like the deer or kind of like a snowy tree little side piece thing, not like a tree, but you know what I'm talking about, kind of like a maybe 12-inch tall thing. That way you could keep those out or like the things with the snowflakes because it's like, yeah, it's snowy out.
Some people do those little trees that are on the tabletop, and then they just take the little ornaments off and they put the new ones on. Is that what you're talking about for the different
something kind of like, you know, you could take away the Christmas sense of thing, but not the winter sense of something. Mm-hmm. And then just leave the winter stuff out while it's snowy, but you kind of, it's like, oh, it's pretty.
I love the holidays, but I do think that when you start seeing things now, maybe now we're getting closer because Halloween at least is over. But before Halloween, I don't know when we got into that whole thing where we're celebrating then. It's all weird. All right, guys, thanks for joining us today for the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis. I think Ro will be back tomorrow, and Monday Night Football is right here on WGN.